You may have noticed at last night's Democratic presidential debate in Atlanta that many of the frontrunners were talking directly to Black voters and the need to connect with Black Americans in the race to win the Democratic nomination. This was a definite distinction from previous debates. And some of the most memorable and at times perplexing moments of the night were squabbles with candidates going back and forth over who connects with Black Americans the most. To unpack what happened last night and the significance of it, we're joined by The Washington Post's political reporter Eugene Scott and political strategist and commentator Angela Rye in studio. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. Yes. So before we begin, we have to talk about where this debate took place, the Tyler Perry Studios in Atlanta. Perhaps a sign of the political and economic power of Georgia, and also really an acknowledgement of the space that Black voters occupy in the primary electorate. But Eugene, I want to start with you first. Talk about the significance of Georgia in the 2020 election.
Well, you can't talk about Georgia and 2020 without talking about Georgia and 2018 and the much larger issue of voter disenfranchisement. And that topic came up repeatedly during the debate, specifically related to Stacey Abrams, who was the Democratic nominee for governor in 2018. And there's genuine concern moving forward that Black voters and Latino voters and perhaps other voters of color will not have their ballots counted as we move into 2020, because many of the problems that existed 2 years ago, should we say, that led to votes being ignored or not counted properly still exists. And so we certainly saw candidates trying to take the lead in addressing that issue, shedding light on it, and perhaps providing solutions to it.
Yeah, a lot of them talked about voter suppression and ways that they were working to fight with it, fight against it. Right from the start, the candidates were speaking, though, to Black voters about a number of issues. In Cory Booker's opening statement, he talked about being at a Black church and his parents attending HBCUs. And when it came to a head that Senator Kamala Harris was asked by the moderator to respond to her previous critique of South Bend, Indiana Mayor Peter Buttigieg, this is what she had to say. Take a listen.
There are plenty of people who applauded Black women for the success of the 2018 election. Applauded Black women for the election of a senator from Alabama. But, you know, at some point, folks get tired of just saying, oh, you know, thank me for showing up, and say, well, show up for me. Because when Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die in connection with childbirth in America, when the sons of Black women will die because of gun violence more than any other cause of death, when Black women make 61 cents on the dollar as compared to all women who tragically make 80 cents on the dollar, the question has to be, where you been and what are you going to do? And do you understand who the people are?
I'm going to get to Buttigieg's response in a moment, but Angela, this was a powerful moment.
Mm-hmm. It was, because this is one of those moments where you realize, for those among us who do not realize it, the importance of having a diverse candidacy, a diverse group of candidates speaking to issues. I know that for me, every debate up until last night, the person who has been the voice of reason on police brutality, on gun violence in communities of color, on issues around mass incarceration and criminal justice reform has been Julian Castro, and he was noticeably absent.
That's
yesterday.
Right. He wasn't there.
And I feel like this particular moment, Kamala Harris really filled that very obvious gap for us.
Yeah, and Julian Castro wasn't there because he didn't qualify.
Right, and but based on the standards that they set forth, that I think again have to be revisited, because in trying to be fair, it still favors folks who can pay their way onto a debate stage, which we saw yesterday as well. And so I think, to the point, Kamala Harris having this moment where she 100% acknowledged, and I'm not saying she ever shies away from her Blackness, but really embodied it for the Black women who don't have the numbers to be on that stage, who don't have the political experience to be on the stage, but have a common shared experience with her in what it's like to be disenfranchised, discounted, treated as invisible, and feel like they're voiceless with the party that they overwhelmingly support, I thought was powerful.
Yeah, let's go to what Mayor Pete Buttigieg said in response to Harris.
And I care about this because while I do not have the experience of ever having been discriminated against because of the color of my skin, I do have the experience of sometimes feeling like a stranger in my own country, turning on the news and seeing my own rights come up for debate, and seeing my rights expanded by a coalition of people like me and people not at all like me, working side by side, shoulder to shoulder, making it possible for me to be standing here wearing this wedding ring in a way that couldn't have happened two elections ago, lets me know just how deep my obligation is to help those whose rights are on the line every day, even if they are nothing like me in their experience.
Eugene, I want to know from you, hearing that, do you think that Buttigieg made any inroads? I mean, he is really polling very low in South Carolina right now, really at 0%.
You know, he probably did not. I think the point he was trying to make in that moment was, as a member of a marginalized group, as a gay American, he knows what it is like to be otherized and disrespected because of his identity. But bringing it up in a moment when the conversation was about how black people have been historically disenfranchised from the political process came off as tone deaf to quite a few people who are, in fact, both black and gay. And Kamala Harris spoke to that issue this morning at the Black Women's Power Breakfast in Atlanta. She called his comments naive and unproductive. There has
and
to
not
be
direct
a
w- enough. Do you think that was the issue? It just wasn't direct enough. Mm.
It wasn't. He really should have kept the conversation on how black people and black women in particular specifically are harmed by the current political process, opposed to widening it to include how white gay men are as well.
Okay. You know, yeah. Angela, please.
One thing that I think is interesting is you kind of had two tone deafish moments like that last night. The other one came from Joe Biden when Joe Biden said, I'm from the black community. And it's like, Joe, we love you as a, you know, and as a former associate member of the Congressional Black Caucus. Sir, we applaud your allyship. But one place you do not come from is out of the black community.
Let's hear that for a moment. He did. It was almost a memeable moment that when he said that. Let's take that clip.
I'm part of that Obama coalition. I come out of the black community in terms of my support. If you notice, I have more people supporting me in the black community that have announced for me because they know me. They know who I am. Three former chairs of the Black Caucus, the only African-American woman that had ever been elected to the United States Senate, a whole range of people.
No,
my point
that's
is,
not true. The other
that's
one
not
is
true.
Here.
I said the first. I said the first African-American elected.
Come
first
on.
African-American. So my point is that one of the reasons I was picked to be vice president was because of my relationship, long-standing relationship with the black community. I was part of that coalition.
And Biden was referring to Senator Kara Mosley Braun.
Right.
And he misspoke. He meant to say the first, but he said the only.
And he swore and, he said
Kamala,
the first, too. You
yeah, Kamala Harris was right there next to him. We're laughing at this, but let's talk a little bit about the significance of this. Biden has had a lot of support from black communities, and I use plural because we are not a monolith.
Yeah.
But sometimes as high as 40% in South Carolina. Do you think this moment, this back and forth with all of them, will have any impact on his standing and the other standings? Angela.
So first, I have to just acknowledge the fact that, no, we're not monolithic, but in so many ways, the black electorate is parallel to the majority in that they are making decisions about who they think is electable based on what conventional wisdom has told them election after election. This is the same group of people that weren't giving Barack Obama a chance, right? They thought that he was not electable. They said, I remember older black folks saying we can't get a black president. We can't have a black president in the United States. Come on. And so one in the same, Joe Biden has earned some stripes based on the fact, right, that he was a part of the Obama coalition by being the vice president. Mm-hmm. So he gets some gravitas from that maybe he ordinarily wouldn't have. So I think, this is a longer conversation for another day.
Yeah, but it's an important one. Eugene, with the little bit of time we have, I want you to respond to that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think what was also interesting in terms of being tone deaf by Biden's comments as him implying that he was brought on the Obama ticket to help bring more black votes to the table. And that's actually not why he was brought on. He had foreign policy experience. He could really connect with white working class Americans from, you know, places like Scranton, Pennsylvania, where he is from, not the black community. And that's a good thing. That's a great thing. But to misrepresent the value you bring to the table in front of two other black candidates who have long roots in the black community, I don't think won him more points with black Americans.
Very interesting night and so much more to come. Thank you. That's Washington Post political reporter Eugene Scott and political strategist and commentator Angela Rye.